Okay, we'll call the meeting back to order. When we last left, we were going to have Mr. Cologne and maybe Ms. Lede come up and take questions from the committee. And Mr. Cologne, if you want to make some brief remarks in response to some of the things that were said, that's fine. And then
sure.
I'm sure committee members, as they come in, will have questions. And so,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, yes, I'd like to address some of the things that came up. First, Jeff Weber, he mentioned, talked a little bit about the CSPs.
Is Jeff here?
Yes,
yeah,
okay. First of all, I didn't give you the permission to talk about my sister, so I'm not feeling too comfortable about that, so I just want to state that for the record. As it relates to the CSPs, the cost to run the downtown CSP and the Southside CSP, the rest of the providers, two-thirds of all the rest of the clients, they're able to provide. So they're able to provide services to many more clients. So over time, if we were to move in this direction, we'd be able to serve more clients with the existing resources that we have. And I think that's a significant thing to take in mind. Retention bonus, as I mentioned, he referenced the retention bonus to keep staff. We have this in place. We've been working with HR for many months now, and we'll be on releasing this specific plan to employees in the near future. And in terms of addressing staffing issues, there's been a CNA issue and mandatory overtime and people working a lot of overtime. We've hired about 10 new CNAs, and we've also contracted out with CNA staffing firm to help reduce those issues. Related to Don Poulos and Dr. Thrasher, there's some information I want Jim Kubicek to talk about the validity of our numbers. And I just want to say that there's no... Dr. Thrasher and I went over the same numbers, and those numbers that we got come from the hospitals, and those numbers are staff beds, not just available beds. Those are staff beds, meaning that's what the hospitals give us, because they're not going to give us beds they can't staff. It is true that some of the hospitals, they have an exclusionary criteria. They don't take all of our clients. That is true. But I also want to mention that while one Columbia St. Mary's has gotten out of the game, two systems are going to increase their capacity. And the capacity exists right now with Aurora, which has stepped it up substantially, and Rogers appears to have a willingness to do a lot more in this next year. There's a lot of capacity in this community, and it continues to grow. You want to talk about some of the data that you have?
Sure. Chair, supervisors, my name is Jim Kubicek. I'm the interim administrator at the Behavioral Health Division. I do want to respond to a couple of the issues that were identified. I know the data well. I've lived it and breathed it for a number of years. In fact, I set up the monitoring system and the data collection system. So the issue that Director Cologne alluded to is absolutely accurate. There are two types of capacities when you're looking at a hospital that you deal with. There's the functional capacity, and then there's the licensed capacity. What I asked the hospital systems a number of years ago to convey to us on a daily basis, this is every single day, is what is their functional capacity? What can they receive in terms of transfers on that given day? Now, admittedly, this is a point in time. We're not asking the hospital systems to call 10 times a day for every discharge they have. When they do call is early in the morning. Early in the morning typically is when their census is going to be at the highest, because discharges occur over the course of that day. So all these, the data that we are providing you is absolutely and clearly functional capacity. That is the number of transfer patients that can be received on a given day. And again, this is, as to the veracity of that information, it's what they tell us. It's what the hospital systems tell us. And they get those reports in return. Sometimes the administrative staff in the various hospital systems will review what information has been given to us and verify it, because they are motivated, clearly, to have their census capacity as filled as possible. The other piece that was mentioned in terms of capacity is, for the last quarter, 41% of the time the hospital systems were full. And I just want to explain that a little bit. If you look at the aggregate, if you look at the number from the total patient population, that is accurate. But what we are talking about is a downsizing in our adult population, in our adult beds. A major portion of what contributed to those beds being filled is twofold. It's the number of children, that we've tried to transfer the number of children, and a lot of times the children's units at particularly the two facilities that accept kids are full, and the Medicaid beds. There are not a lot of Medicaid beds that are in this community, and that's an issue that we can't control, because BHD is also not a Medicaid bed. We were not able to accept straight Medicaid as a reimbursable service because of the IMD exclusion. Freestanding psychiatric hospitals are not able to get Medicaid reimbursement. So if I put myself in your positions as supervisors, I would be confused. Because you're getting what appears to be conflicting information, and I guess what I can tell you is I track these numbers exceedingly diligently. Our return rate has been very low. If that return rate from the private hospital systems has spiked in the recent time, I'm not aware of that. Typically, it hovers below 2% in terms of the overall return rate. Sometimes they return individuals because they have presented too much of a behavioral challenge for the hospital systems. Sometimes they will return them because there are placement issues with those facilities. And sometimes they return them because their insurance is lapped. We have always, as part of the deal that we created years ago with the hospital systems, and if you would recall back in the days of 2007, for those of you who have been around a while, those are the days when we had massive, massive wait lists to get folks into BHD, to get people waiting. They were waiting in emergency rooms throughout the medical system. Those days are over. We have not, I knock on wood when I say that, we have not gone on a wait list status, I believe, since first quarter of this year, and our overall numbers for wait list have gone down in an amazing fashion since those days. If we're going to do this right, it should be done with no system impact whatsoever. And that's what we experienced when we closed the 24 beds in 2012. The number that we came up with of 12 is not an artificial number. It's not just a number that we got, that we arrived at by throwing a dart at a dartboard. We started with discussions about closing 24 beds, and we realized at that time that the system was not ready to handle a 24-bed reduction, so we reduced that number. We also pushed the start date for that 12-bed reduction back into the beginning of the second quarter in 2014. So those are just a few of the initial reactions that I have, and I'm fully prepared to give full reports with all the data that we have available to this committee. Whatever it is you need, we'll be happy to provide.
Thank you. Supervisor Romo West, did you have some questions?
I do. Thank you. And I'd like to start off, and I apologize, but I'd like to start off with a small point of personal privilege in regards to some of the hoopla that's floating around surrounding mental health in Milwaukee County. And since it's budget time, I think it is appropriate to address some of the comments that were made this morning in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel editorial. I was elected to this board in 2004. From 2004 to 2008, I was the co-chair of the Health and Human Needs Committee alongside of Elizabeth Cox Jones. For my first term, we put significant money in at BHD to handle the what was then a crisis with our staffing. Our staffing was way low, way below where it was supposed to be. We also, in 2005, closed Hilltop units and took those individuals and put them out into the community. We did that at the request of the state and not because it was something that was initiated by anyone in Milwaukee County. We also, from 2004 to 2008, added significant housing for the mentally ill, and Mr. Matthew can would be able to verify that. So each and every single budget. We also, within 2004, 2008, opened the Southside CRC, which we subcontract for those services. So we made significant, this county board made significant contributions to mental health in Milwaukee County. And when I say this county board, what I mean is that all of these initiatives, or most of these initiatives, happened by amendment, but not something that was brought forward by then County Executive Scott Walker. From in 2008 to 2012, we commissioned the HSRI study. And when I say we, I mean the Milwaukee County Board of Supervisors. We were approached and we put money in to add to that study. When that study was released, we didn't just sit on the study. We started the Mental Health Redesign Committee. And when I say we, I mean this Milwaukee County Board of Supervisors. Our current county executive, Chris Abley, was not even in office when we began that process, nor was he in office when we commissioned the HSRI study. I just want to say that for the record, and not to down any of the work that he's done. We also put money in the budget in 2010 to start addressing some of the Hilltop residents to have them evaluated and have to find out if there were more appropriate placements for them in the community. We also added money that year to open a Northside Crisis Resource Center. We also, again, that year put money in for mental health redesign. That year, between those years, we also started a facilities committee to take a look at where mental health should be. And I should note, between 2004 and 2008, then County Executive Scott Walker pushed us very, very, very hard to go to St. Mike's and wanted us to rent that facility. And imagine how that would turn out for us today had we had made that decision, now making the decision that we are not going to be providing residential beds anymore for people. We restructured the children's waiting room out at BHD because we listened to the concerns that staff had and said this waiting area is not in the right place. So the county board, through amendment, put money in to address that situation. The same thing with the emergency room entrance. They said our clients need dignity, and if they are being restrained, if they're having a difficult time with their entrance into BHD, they need to have a separate entrance so that they're not doing that in front of everybody in the emergency room and causing chaos for people. So again, this county board put the money into the budget to be able to do that. We also, as most of us will remember, put in $3.5 million to rehab our building when the state came in and said, you have a ton of violations and all of these things need to be fixed. So I want to vehemently disagree with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel when they say that this transition started last year and that that it was the county executive who had who is moving to a community-based model. So we were very ecstatic when the county executive was elected, got on board, and said, yes, we agree with your vision, and we also want to move to a community-based model. But I want to be very clear that whereas the county executive has put money in the budget, that the $3 million, it was, again, this board that said, we're going to keep that $3 million in while also saving the Milwaukee County EMS program, which was eliminated to come up with the funds to fund the first $3 million. So I want to, just for the record, say that I do take it a little personally. I think certainly some misconceptions about the board's role in BHD, as well as our role in the mental health redesign or promotion of services for individuals with complex mental health needs, or there certainly are some misconceptions, and so again, I want to clear that up. I believe that as part of the redesign, we supported, the county board, placing individuals in the least restrictive community settings. And someone can correct me if I'm wrong about that. And in fact, as I just stated, we were the ones who kicked that initiative off. And we're very happy that the county executive now, again, has shared that vision. So when the Journal Sentinel says that some on the county board still resist change that will improve services to patients, I don't believe that that's a true statement. In fact, I think it's outright erroneous. Because what we may have differences in, and Director Colon addressed this morning, is the time frame in which this is being done. it does make us extremely nervous that we're moving from a residential treatment to a community-based program, because many of us were present during the facilities meetings in which we brought in providers and were told time and time again that the community structure doesn't exist in order to properly take care of our patients. And so I think we have a right to be a little nervous with the process, but I don't think that it's right or that the correct statement would be that we're resisting the change. I think what we're questioning, again, is some of the time frame and some of the services. We only really get one chance to do this right. And I think, and I know that Director Colon and I have had this conversation many times, and he agrees with that synopsis. So I do have a couple of questions, Mr. Chairman, and I thank you for that latitude. The access to recovery grants are ending, and I'm wondering what we are doing to fight for that federally, or if there is an opportunity federally for that money to come through, or what is our plan B in regards to access to recovery that's going to end in this September.
Thank you, Supervisor Roma West. Mr. Chairman, my name is Susan Gottach. I'm the director of the Community Services Branch, and it's the Community Services Branch in BHD, which oversees the Access to Recovery Grant. Supervisor Roma West, you're absolutely correct. That is probably the issue of gravest concern that I have in regards to the continuation of services for individuals with substance use disorders in this community. Access to Recovery was a grant that we received in 2004, and we were fortunate enough to receive three cycles of that grant, and it has changed the infrastructure of the delivery of care in Milwaukee community. And I think one of the things is that it is a top-performing grant of this entire country. Milwaukee County is one of the top three performing sites for the delivery of substance use disorder and recovery services anywhere else in the entire nation. So in the president's budget, there is a recommendation for an Access to Recovery 4. However, information that we received from our grants project officer at SAMHSA, which is the entity that administers this funds, says that they want to administer 19 awards, but they want it to be to new sites. And so there are only 19 other states in this nation that have not yet received an Access to Recovery grant. What we have done is that through the county exec's office, we have reached out to our congressional representatives in this area to ask merely one thing. Please open it up for competition, because we believe we would be able to submit a competitive application because of the infrastructure change that has happened and because of the performance that we have demonstrated with the use of these funds and the impact that it has had in this community. In the meantime, though, we are very cognizant of the fact that this grant in its current cycle will end in September of 2014. So a variety of steps that we are are taking in order to prepare for that are, one, all of our central intake unit sites, we have asked them to become certified application counselor organizations. So, as part of the intake process, when an individual's income is determined, we are asking that part of the intake also enroll them through the, either the marketplace or Medicaid as to what they might be eligible for. On a bi-monthly basis, we review the fiscal of everything that goes through our fee-for-service network. This is a very large fee-for-service network which we administer. It's $9.3 million on an annual basis. We have expenditures that are approximately $150,000 on a weekly basis for care. And I think one of the things that we recognize is that if an individual is eligible for insurance, the county has to be the payer of what insurance would not cover. We know right now the way that insurance is structured is it will never pay for residential treatment, nor will it ever pay for recovery support services. It is those recovery support services that are usually the types of services that truly do promote an individual's stability and sobriety within the community. So as we continue to move forward, what we know what we will have to do is maximize the revenues in which an individual is eligible for through our central intake units becoming CAC organizations. We are also, I don't want to say begging, but I mean every single time that we have a conference call with our grant project officer, we are inquiring on a regular basis as to how, you know, the process of the SAMHSA has to make the determination as to who's going to be an applicant. We have received support from Congresswoman Gwen Moore. As she has written to the administrator of SAMHSA, who is Pamela Hyde, on our behalf. And I think one of the things is that, you know, we are trying the best that we possibly can to move the providers that we have to become certified and credentialed in Medicaid. And we are also looking at those providers and where they actually may be able to be placed as far as providers within the marketplace, too. Because we have individuals that will become eligible based on their income for Medicaid, but we also have individuals that were receiving Badger Care Plus that will be moving off and will have to go into the marketplace. So we need to be able to kind of navigate and see who's in our network and who can actually be able to provide services in both the marketplace and through Medicaid.
Great. And then a similar question in regards to the 1915I.
Yeah.
So in 2015, 1915I becomes a full-on entitlement, according to the state of Wisconsin Department of Health and Human Services. So what safeguards are being put into place now to prevent Milwaukee County from overspending in that area as well?
Right. I think one of the main things that we're really trying to take a look at is the partnership and the work that we did with budget in order to do a five-year fiscal projection as to what will happen. It is our intention to roll this program out the way that other counties have rolled it out. And so there's three services that are covered under 1915I, and the one that actually has the opportunity to generate the highest amount of revenue balance through the Medicaid billing is the residential benefit. It is our intention to roll it out through the residential programs first, and that is through our CBRFs. So that is happening right now. We are working in partnerships with our CBRFs right now. The two primary providers are Bell Therapy and TLS. They have been trained in, you know, how to complete the intake packets. And I think one of the things that we recognize is that we have to be able to work in a strong partnership with the state from a quality assurance standpoint so we do not overstep in where we have overstepped. But the things that we have identified through the fiscal analysis is that we actually have the ability to take those revenues that we anticipate that we would be able to generate by the offset of the CBRF placement, also allow that as an opportunity to expand the service array to the other two services that are available in the CRS benefit, and then allow us an opportunity to create a risk reserve as a protection to reduce the fiscal exposure for the county as we actually continue to move forward. I think the one thing that I do also want to mention is that the county is administering this as a co-participation benefit. So we are expanding services for existing BHD clients. If by chance there are new clients that may come in, they still have to go through the enrollment process that is laid out in Chapter 51, which is they have to meet the functional and the diagnostic criteria to apply for services, as this is a recovery benefit. So they would establish a treatment protocol first as they continue to move forward. So we will look at individuals as they move in, but we are definitely rolling it out as a co-participation benefit where we are enhancing service delivery for existing individuals that we have in our program.
Right, but that benefit does end in 2015, that co-participation.
it is an, well, the way that it's interpreted right now is that an individual does not have to be in another service to participate.
Right.
But what that does is that that shifts the responsibility to the client to submit all of the Medicaid paperwork and complete the intake and everything on behalf of themselves. And it would be, I think, irresponsible for the county not to intervene when it is such a complex program like a Medicaid program, in which we know this is only a benefit that can be administered by the county, so we have to take a responsible role. And I think one of the things that we recognize is the critical importance of care coordination for individuals that are participating. And all the individuals that will be coming through the CRS program will be assigned a care coordinator. And that is to navigate not only the requirements of Medicaid, but to also to continue to put them on the recovery path for which the purpose of that program is intended.
Okay. I have two more questions. The next question is, whereas there are not many, if any, hospitals which currently house residential treatment units, other counties do operate nursing homes for their most acute mentally ill. Was it ever discussed with other counties, with other neighboring counties, to create such a facility for our most acutely mentally ill? And what was the discussion like at redesign regarding this option? And I'm bringing this up because HSRI didn't say anything about closures of all units. It really talked a lot about one of our major focuses was emergency detentions and getting that number down. Because I've heard the argument regarding timelines, but the other thing with the timelines and how, you know, Hartside was able to downsize in 24 months and other places 18 months, but those were actual state closures where the state came in and said, you have to close. So they were within. They had a strict timeline that they needed to meet. The other thing is with those closures is that I've never seen data to back up what happened to those individuals. How many of them are deceased? How many of them walked away from their group home and are now homeless or living on the streets? How many of them are incarcerated? How many of them are still with the program? How many of them, you know, will you see at Walgreens buying a candy bar? What are the breakdown of those individuals? Because sadly, within human services, sometimes a success is seen as the person still being alive and not, you know, and not the fact that they're incarcerated or that they're back in a facility. And so.
So what was your question?
My question is, was there a discussion as to whether or not we could or should look at neighboring, you know, like, is it Trupelo County?
Trupelo.
Yes, did a tri-county nursing home to address the issues that they had with their acutely mentally ill.
Okay.
Is that something that we considered, or?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Supervisor Romo West. So we've had some discussions about this, but the really important thing to keep in mind here is that we're really trying to provide smaller community-based settings for these individuals, so we don't want to transfer them to another long-term care unit. It is the hope that they can be in a smaller community-based setting that provides them with better outcomes, higher quality, just in that smaller setting, because we know that research shows that, you know, people live with more dignity and with better outcomes. Now, the managed care organizations are aware of numerous other facilities that are out there, and in the event there's a need for another like facility, they're aware of those. They work with, we got the whole team, you know, that includes the state, disability rights, our staff, you know, the guardians, then that can participate in that process. But I would say the overwhelming majority of these individuals would not go to another institution or another long-term care, but rather in a smaller community-based setting.
Jerry, and I think some people may argue with you that a nursing home is a smaller community-based setting. You know, there's nursing homes. The nursing home my grandmother was in was 12 beds out in Oak Creek. And so that is a smaller. Ms. Lyde and Mr. Stein were kind enough to take me on a tour the other day of some of the different options in residential treatment and residential housing. And the very first place that we stopped was very similar to a nursing home. And it was, I think it was eight beds and eight beds, so a total of 16 beds. You know, and so we do have the expertise, we do have the staff, and so I was just wondering why it maybe wasn't looked at for Milwaukee County to, especially knowing that there are going to be individuals that it is going to be more expensive to treat them in the community than it would be to treat them in our facility. It seems to me to be, you know, at least an avenue that's worth exploring.
Let's see if Ms. Ledea has a short answer for us as to why it may or may not have been considered.
Okay, for Jackson Center and Hearthside, which were licensed as ICFMR facilities that closed, the two, and you're absolutely right about that, the state came in and said that the care was not adequate and there was a set period of time. And less than 2% of those individuals came back to a public facility, which would have been Hilltop. The rest went into smaller community-based facilities. And in terms of the funding, with reference to providing supports, generally family care, in terms of CBRFs and other waiver funding, did not pay for individuals in facilities over 8 beds. So that facility that you saw was licensed as an 8-bed CBRF. Now, they'd pay for assisted living facilities, but they're individual apartments for individuals. So the funding really dictates, when you're providing community-based services, the number of beds that they will support, is because they do not want to pay for small, mini institutions. They want to pay for people in more natural types of settings.
Okay. Thank you very much. And just quickly, I have a question regarding the downsizing of the inpatient bed, and I just want to clarify so that to make sure that I'm correct on this. So what we're asking is that we downsize the 12 inpatient beds, and that we, as Milwaukee County, then pay the hospitals to take our individuals for us or from us.
Yeah. No, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, Supervisor Romo West. No, we are interested in entering into contracts with hospitals just in the event that the system would get backed up and we would need that flexibility to utilize the beds more effectively that are available in the community, would use it for that approach. The reason why we're downsizing the 12 beds right now is based on the data that I presented that shows the system, there's capacity in the system. So that's the reason why we're moving forward with that.
Okay, so the contract that you're setting up with the hospitals, what would that consist of?
Sure.
So I've been in negotiations with a couple of the hospital systems, and these will be contracts to treat folks without a payer source, and they will be invoked only in the event that we'll put some metrics in place in terms of if we reach a certain amount of open beds, then we will start utilizing the contracts for the hospitals with the hospital systems that will take care of folks without a payer source. So essentially, it doesn't make any sense to do it as a separate item and to send all our folks over there. If we have capacity at the Behavioral Health Division, essentially we're paying for them twice then. This scenario, we're only using it as a means to modulate that census. So we're only paying for them once because the bed is would theoretically be filled by somebody who has a payer.
Okay. So I just want to just quickly say that I am concerned with that aspect of the budget. And part of my concern comes from the belief that we're not doing enough to assist our homeless, many of whom are suffering from mental illness. And that we are not doing enough to serve our inmates, many of whom are suffering from mental illness. So without currently serving all of the individuals with mental illness in our community, we are already talking about closing all residential units and downsizing inpatient beds. And I did read with great interest the article in the Wall Street Journal in regards to what happens to people with mental illness when they are not treated well in the community, and that is that they end up in our prison system. And so it is a little concerning, again, just because I think, and we all can agree, that, you know, we are not currently treating everybody with mental illness. And under Obamacare, now that we'll have more resources, we hopefully will have more people with mental illness that will come forward and that will need treatment. And I just want to make sure that we're not putting the cart before the horse and putting ourselves in a situation where we're going to go back to the days where we were doing diversion and we were doing and we were having wait lists and things like that, because those were not pleasant things. And so thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the flexibility here.
Thank you. Supervisor Jerzyk.
Thank you. I know we've sat here a long time. All of us have. I just want to make a comment. I know Director Colon gets passionate, but in terms of moral commitments, this board is a policy-making role. I supported HSRI. I supported money for services in the community. In fact, money that was put into it wasn't spent by the administration. I'm not an administrator. And I just want to point that out. The North CRC, which everyone wanted to see open, was closed. So we can make policy, but if it's not administered and carried out, we're not being successful. And, you know, we had a journal really be pretty harsh on this county board this morning, again vilifying the board for every problem in this county. And yet, from a policy perspective, I think this board has been moving in the correct direction. Now, I'm not responsible for every comment every supervisor makes, but nor am I responsible for the comments Joe Sanfilippo makes, which was very unfortunate, his dog comment. And he was the supervisor who sat here when he was on the board wanting to open a new hospital. And all of a sudden, he's speaking from an entirely different place now in the community. I just wish once in a while we'd get the facts out there. So, now, getting to my questions. These 12 beds that we're talking about closing, are these locked units?
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Is there a single locked unit?
The acute beds are.
Is there any other locked unit in the county?
All the private inpatient psychiatric units are locked.
Have locked units?
Mm-hmm.
I've been told that they don't have locked units. Could you check that, please?
Sure.
Because I'm told Milwaukee County is the only locked unit. So when you're doing your 51, 55 placements, and you get a court-ordered locked unit, there's no place else to go.
So there's a distinction there between the 51 placements and the 55 placements. The 51 placements are the acute hospitals.
Right.
All the acute hospitals... If I'm mistaken, I will certainly let you know. But to my knowledge, they're all locked.
Get back to me on that, because I'd like to hear that. On closing Hilltop, etc. I am supportive of that. I would like to see community services. I have always supported that. But now we have Kindred closing 300 some beds that are going to be competing for placements. And I really wonder if the downsizing you're going to do is going to be successful, because there's only so much capacity out there. Housing, supportive
right.
housing, community services.
Yeah.
I support that. Policymakers support that. I'm not an administrator. That's on you guys.
Sure.
So, you know, we can all preach from the mountaintops, but it really takes work. And I understand this is difficult stuff. And it really gets down to person by person.
Right.
And the guardian, and the guardian ad litem, and the family. And it's hard work. But, you know, if we put money in the budget and it's not being administered, please don't have Abley's administration come here or have the editorial board if that's happening. I don't know if it's happening, so maybe I'll be a little careful with my comments.
Yeah.
But let's not be vilifying policymakers who have been trying to, at least I think, cooperate with you on this. Ms. Lydia, I don't know if you had an answer for that question.
Well, I just was going to make a comment about KinderCare. I think that we really don't know all of the facts at this point, and that's how many individuals are over the age of 60 versus under the age of 60. And so we really are trying to find out what the impact that is going to be, because I think you're certainly right. We are definitely concerned about if many of those individuals will be going through them through options counseling and going through family care, what that means for them. But until we really know what we're talking about, I think we'll have to get more information, and the state is going to let us know as we find out how many numbers are there, what that's going to mean, and what that's going to mean for this community.
You know, this county has already spun off County General. And it was my understanding, I wasn't here when they did it, but I certainly have talked to supervisors that were, that the mental health piece was too tough. And they pulled that back so they could successfully spin off the rest of the hospital piece. Now, we do have some opportunities with the Affordable Care Act and so on. Now that patients are actually going to have insurance, I really think the private hospitals have to step up. I almost think you're not being aggressive enough on this. We have a very significant position out at the medical complex with a very significant building, a big building, whatever's going to happen to it. And if Frederick and the medical college don't want to, you know, step up on this, let's start talking to Aurora. They have Dewey fairly close. Let's be a little more aggressive about that and see where our private partners are on the hospital. I have said 3 years in a row now, I want to see the hospital accredited. It's not accredited. Am I, as a policymaker, now responsible for that? No. And I don't think it's getting accredited because, quite frankly, it's tough to run a hospital from a county government viewpoint. Hospitals are pretty much privatized in this society. So if we're going to go in that direction, get more aggressive about it, you've got some carrots you can offer, and start using them. That's my viewpoint on it. But, you know, again, housing. And if Joe Rice wants a project on taking things away from a county board, why don't we take housing away from the Ozaukee County Board? Because they voted against affordable housing. And we need affordable housing with supportive services. So let's start spreading some of this around a little bit. But anyway, I've said my piece. Thank you.
Okay. Supervisor Schmidt, what's your piece?
I've been on talk a long time, too, I guess, on some things. But we all have a lot of passions on this. And my summary would be this. And a number of the questions we're still asking now, and I presume other members could ask other questions, too, are pretty much summarized. And Meg, as a matter of fact, our chairwoman on Health and Human Service talked about the access to recovery program. That's in our notes from our staff. You know what? Whatever's going on in the journal, whatever going on in the past, I mean, we're here and now. You know, I still feel a strong responsibility. I know every member of this board does, even, and all those not on finance also, we wouldn't be here. We still have some staff. We still have some responsibility. So it's going to be a budget we're going to work on hard this year. So what we need, and I got commitments already, I feel, and that most of the questions that we have, we had a staff look into this. I mean, there are so many nuances in this budget. You could talk for 2 more hours on this. We remember some of the things, okay? This is quite common. We're giving a lot of answers to our own questions, too. So after we all get the same information, then I think we can make an informed decision here. Is this the right pace? I think we all agree it's the right thing to do. The pace is the major question here. And, you know, I do take a little umbrage, too, that we haven't done anything because we've done a lot. It's much different than it was just a few years ago, and you're living proof of some of those things. So my point is that I did ask, while we still have some staff, Mr. Weddle, to copy these questions for you. A lot had been summarized already today. We had a long answer on the access to recovery. Maybe we could get a synopsis of that, too. But I think we all need this information. And I'm going to ask this for other major departments to come up. I mean, we got a sheriff. We got a couple other things. This is major of if we talk about our budget and where we're going, and what we've attempted to do. So, and I think I got your commitment, Director Cologne, that why we still can ask questions for department heads, if we're supposed to do our due diligence, is we need the same information. Everybody in the committee needs the same information. So we've got questions here that are good questions. Let's not lose these questions. Many of you are asking these questions in different ways. So next time we meet, and you know all the answers to these questions, basically. Now, we've asked about hospitals. What commitments do we have from hospitals? How are we using that $1 million? Are we helping subsidize, employees we're going to lose if they can get other jobs in these community services? Where are these people going? Okay? A lot of the questions we've asked. So we're going to get that to you, and I'm presuming, next time we meet, Mr. Chairman, and as Supervisor Johnson and our co-chairman, too, that we're in unison, the committee is asking this, that and you're willing to do it, and you can summarize for us concise, and then we'll have a document with your comments that answer all these questions. And we have a chance to look at it beforehand. like many things that are happening, I hope we get these statements so we can look at them. We don't remember everything that's said here. We've been here how many hours already? Okay, it's going to be the same thing over and over unless we get some answers. We'll have our own individual ways to look at things. But if we have answers to these questions that you can document, have on paper for us, then we have a chance to really study it and then make an informed decision when we get to that point. So are it clear what I'm asking? The committee's okay with this? Chairman? So I'm going to ask when we come to our major departments that we just copy these.
Those questions that
were in. Yeah, Mr. Weddle has the information, and I think Director Clone and a lot of department heads have probably seen these already. They've worked together a little bit, DAS and our staff, and then we can get answer these on paper before we meet next time. That's what I'm asking.
Okay. Supervisor Haas?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've seen this in the budget document. There's $400,000 for housing in there. I was wondering how much housing gets purchased with that money. And also, are you guys going to have some real ways to analyze the usage of this, some ways to objectively quantify how much is being used and how much the money is being used for a purpose?
Sure.
Jim, Matthew,
one. Come on, Jim.
Sure. Good morning, Mr. Chair, Supervisors. I'm Jim Matthew, the Housing Administrator for the Housing Division. Couldn't quite hear because the microphone was off. Was it regarding the $400,000? Was that a question?
Thanks for pointing it out. Yeah, my question was about this $400,000 in housing that's in this budget document. I've heard the number, there would be 40 units purchased with that. And so I'm wondering about, is there going to be some kind of quantization of this beyond the 40 units that these people will be put into? And also questions such as, how will clients be assigned there? Is it for people transitioning from inpatient care, or is it maybe for the homeless? Or, you know, who is, I'd like to know a bit more about who and what's it for.
Sure.
This new budget doc, it looks nice, pleasant to look at, but some of the information is unfortunately rather blank.
Sure, Mr. Chair, Supervisor, I'll give it just a brief synopsis of kind of the concept of the program. So we'll be for 40 units, and what that will do, the budget will be pretty much split between services and rental assistance. So about $200,000 roughly will go towards rental assistance. We have a dramatic shortfall. I believe I talked to the board about it before, about Section 8 vouchers. So one of the ways to subsidize supportive housing would be through this program. So half of the money would go directly for subsidies, and the other half would go to services. That would be case management and peer support services just for those 40 individuals. A lot of supportive housing we've done have been on a project basing. A lot of you have supported a lot of our permanent supportive housing projects. These will be existing units with existing landlords scattered throughout the county. And we're going to be targeting a few different groups with these units. We really kind of want to meet people where they are at. So some of the folks will be coming from the downsizing initiative. Some of the folks will be coming from shelters. We're doing a lot more homeless outreach now than we had in the past with a new position that came out of the mental health redesign called the Community Intervention Specialist. So we're doing a lot more community outreach. The referrals will be coming through the housing division just as we do for all of our other supportive housing. So we'll look to make sure that it makes clinical sense. We'll make sure that folks have access to the neighborhoods they want to have access to. So it's not just for one part of our system. We really kind of just want to meet the needs of the community and see where our referrals come from.
Okay. Where is that information available? Or is it just within your realm, like the breakdown of what goes where?
Well, it's we'll be kind of looking through the RFP process. It was just RFP'd for the nonprofits, and we're also vetting this through our Mental Health Redesign Committee. I'm the co-chair of the Community Linkages Committee, so we will be kind of going through our group to look at the service model and who best might be served by these units.
Okay. And on that note, I see that we have in 2013 we had $3 million allocated towards the redesign. But in this budget today, can you point to some items that are going to be moved to move the redesign forward?
Sure, Mr. Chair, Supervisor Haas. We have a variety of different initiatives that I mentioned earlier. You know, $4.8 million of new initiatives. They consist of housing, you know, Southside Access Clinic, Pier Run Drop-In Center. We have expansion of our crisis mobile team with MPD. We have 24/7 coverage, a crisis mobile team expansion. We have new housing pilot program specifically for AYODA individuals and provide them with case management services. We have the new 40 supportive housing sites. We have case management services for 50 veterans so that we can leverage federal funds. We have money for families moving forward, which is new programs and preventative services specifically for the African American community. We have investments on the Southside partnership with 16th Street.
You have quite a number of things in mind.
Yes.
And this would be helped by closing the center at 12th and Mitchell?
I'm sorry, 12th and Mitchell? No. The Southside CSP?
Yeah.
No, that's a small part of it. I mean, that's only about a $700,000 savings. But it's all the other downsizings that have occurred. We're closing long-term care Hilltop by next year, so there'll be some size savings there. There are savings from the acute care. There are savings from Hilltop. So those are where the majority of the savings are coming that allow us to reinvest. There's about $3.1 million of savings as a result of those closures and downsizings and privatization. Or not privatization, doesn't include CSPs. $3.1 specifically related to the hospital. And as I've mentioned, we're reinvesting more than what we're actually downsizing, because there are other departments contributing to this as well, housing, disability services, as well as BHD.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any other? Supervisor Bowen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a question about several different things, but I'll try to limit to some of the more ones that are really recent. In the doctor's testimony, he did cover the closing of the 18 beds at Columbia St. Mary.
Sure.
And you mentioned, Director, that there would be two private entities stepping up.
Yes.
Do you have the number of beds that they will be stepping up to provide in the community?
Jim may have that, but Aurora just hired, they have the beds. They just didn't have the psychiatrist, so they have a new psychiatrist now that's going to allow them to take more clients. I think it's a total of 68 beds.
I'm not exactly sure what the will be increased. This goes back to our question of functional versus licensed. Their functional capacity will increase this month. By how many beds, I don't have that exact information.
Okay. And what's the other entity that's stepping up? So Aurora is one of those entities.
Right.
Do we know the other entity?
Rogers Memorial. They have a willingness to do more. They just purchased a building, and so they've had conversations with us about a willingness to do more, and so we're engaging with them in those conversations.
Okay. I think it'll be important to confirm the number so we can see if we are building capacity, or if the private sector is building capacity, that we can see that in solid numbers that is actually happening. I'll try not to make any political statements about whatever has been posted in the Journal Sentinel, but from the last time I checked, I think we all believe in making sure that the county moves in the right direction on this, and we've made tough decisions last year and last year's budgeting, and continue to make those decisions today. One of the other entities that did that were known about key positions that are still interim. I think that's also an important point in having the right people, that even if we are downsizing or closing certain units, that we do have dedicated staff and adequate staff in those positions as well. Is there a plan, or is the plan to keep those positions interim, or not fill those positions with people that can fully fulfill the duties of those positions?
Yep. Mr. Chair, Supervisor Bowen, thank you for the question. So we have been aggressively moving forward with filling these positions. So, for example, actually there was one inaccurate statement about the director of nursing. There is a full-time director of nursing in that position. We hired her as the acute care director, but she really, director of nursing was a really good fit. That's where she wanted to work, so we have hired her for that position. We are currently working with a recruitment firm. We have some candidates for the acute care director. We anticipate that being filled in the very near future. We're working with that same vendor to recruit a chief psychiatrist, and we've got about four solid candidates that, you know, we had one interview already. We have another three that we'll be going through over the next probably couple of weeks. And so we're very encouraged that we probably have that filled soon. As you know, Jim Kubitschek is the interim division administrator for BHD, but we're also recruiting for that position, and Jim will apply for that position as well. And I'm told that the recruitment firm has a person or a couple people in mind on that position as well. So many of these positions will be filled in the very near future, and we're moving very aggressively. And let's all keep in mind that, you know, if we had our wishes, we'd have Kathy Eilers here and she'd be the BHD administrator. But unfortunately, that's not how you guys wanted it.
Yeah. Great timing.
That was right.
My other question is the CRC on the north side that was ran by community advocates at the time was closed, and I don't see any specific language that dictates that there will be a CRC on the north side.
Yes.
Is that a possibility?
Absolutely.
Why not make that specific in the budget?
Sure. Mr. Chair and Supervisor Bowen, yes. This the north side CRC, are we, Jim, a couple months away from having that, 2 to 3 months away from having that?
The north side CRC, the vendor will be changed. That's the only thing that will be changed. The funding is not cut. The service will be provided. The building has to be developed, and as soon as that gets done, it's opening up.
Do we know when, like where that location is? That location is on the north side?
Yeah, it's on the north side. It's on Villard somewhere, 54th and Villard.
Okay.
Can I just jump in?
Yeah, I have one more question.
Yeah. I just didn't want to let the Kathy Eilers comment go. You know, came to the board for a vote. Yep. She wasn't confirmed. I thought I read that you have her as a consultant.
Correct.
So you have her.
She was here this morning.
And
yeah, she was here.
I assume that, you know, she's still collecting her pension and being paid as a consultant?
Yes.
Correct.
So you have her. I mean, you know, you need to work with us. I guess I don't think comments like that are... really that productive.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I apologize. I was just stating that that's who we wanted.
I understand.
And I was just, you know, just stating the facts, but I apologize if that offended anybody. It won't happen again.
It didn't necessarily offend anybody. I just think it's, you know, wasn't that productive to go down that road.
I understand.
You ready, Bo?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One more question when it pertains to, you guys mentioned a lot of federal funding that could be coming down the pipe. I think it's important to see specifics about that. The county executive kind of put a post-it note on future funding that would be coming from other things, so I'm not seeing what you plan to do with the federal funding that would be coming down, especially if it's being reinvested in mental health. But I'd like to see numbers on that, because then we could see it looks like it will be a tough budget with other things that we need to fix or fill.
Is that in the questions that Supervisor Schmidt has? Hope we'll get a written
question. Federal funding? Excellent. And that's all, Mr. Chair. Okay.
Supervisor Stamper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. All right. Regarding community capacity first. Real quick, could you provide me a definition of community capacity, how we plan on handling the transition of the goal of the downsizing for this 2014 budget, and also how are we measuring that it is sufficient enough to handle the downsizing and touch a, and those list of investments, was that part of the increase, the proposal to increase the community capacity?
Yes.
Okay. Could you talk a little bit about that first?
Yeah, the one very important thing here is that the long-term care closures, remember, there's you don't, like, develop capacity, develop housing, and then place people. The approach is to take a personalized, individualized approach. Whatever that person needs, the capacity gets built. And the managed care organizations have the responsibility to work on that. So nobody will get placed in the community without the right supports as it relates to that process. That Chapter 50 process, we talked about it, where everybody's involved, ensures that the supports and the housing, all that is in place before anybody were to get relocated. As it relates to the other investments, most of that, as I mentioned, goes towards the general population in trying to reduce our emergency room visits, our psychiatric hospital visits. So there's a lot of new stuff that helps with that population. There's also stuff, as we've mentioned, that even though family care has a responsibility for the majority of this, we're also investing about $1.5 million to help with the transition to it in order to ensure it's done successful. So we have the Crisis Resource Center and the community consultation team and expansion of the crisis mobile team. So there's a lot. We're taking a really good balanced approach in having investments for the individuals from long-term care as well as the general population.
Okay. I don't know if you were able to submit this to everybody.
Yep.
I think they should get this as soon as possible.
I will do that.
But I'm not sure if this is actually in place.
Yes.
For example, in 2013, there's a number that have been discharged. Have they went through this process?
Yes.
Are all the teams currently in place? Are there all positions filled for every single team that's in place for this transition? You know, the teams you just talked about, the consultation team, are all members of that team in place? Are all members of the relocation team, the State 50 team, are all those in place? For example, if somebody wanted to get discharged today, would they go through this process just like this?
Yes. Mr. Chair, Supervisor Stamper, yes. The answer is yes. The Chapter 50 process is in place, so anybody that gets relocated has to go through that very process with all of those players involved. The community consultation team, again, is something that we're adding to support that process, and we don't have the full team together yet. We have some, a nurse and another clinician involved. That will expand. But right now, all of the rest of that process there is in place.
Okay. So the CL team is not ready yet.
Community consultation team. Again,
community
that's
consultation team is the support, but it's not ready. But it's part of the transition.
We don't have a full...
It's in the 14 budget.
Right.
The full expansion of it is in the 14 budget.
Okay. Has anybody been discharged without receiving that right now?
So the individuals that have been discharged... And
this is sort of a yes or no question.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
This is a yes or no question.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Please ask it again.
Is anybody being discharged receiving the CLT service right now? The consultation team, is that in place right now?
We're just trying to move this along.
Yes. Hello, Supervisors. I'm Amy Lorenz. I'm the Director of Crisis Services at Milwaukee County BHD. And, yes, every individual that's being discharged from Hilltop, their providers, their MCOs, and any family members, guardians, are being given information on the community consultation team so that our staff who are a part of the team can consult and can be available if requested to be able to go and assist with that individual in their new placement.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Is the relocation team in place?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. And there was one more team that I was really concerned about. The crisis mobile team, is that in place?
Yes.
Okay. So did you want to – my colleagues are asking me what this is. You want to tell them, let them know what this is?
Yes. Mr. Chair, Supervisor Stamper, I will be sending out an email with a variety of different documents. That'll be one of them, and I'll send it to the whole entire board.
Okay. All right. And what is the policy that's in place for the $1 million retention plan?
Sure.
So,
HR...
Well, that's part of your question.
Yeah, that's part of the questions we have. We'll get a written response to that.
Okay, sure.
Is that okay?
That's fine.
Ms. Mitchell, that's fine with you?
Yeah.
Okay.
And go ahead. I also wanted to comment on that, Ms. Eiler's comment, if you don't mind. She was at the meeting the other day,
yeah.
And, you know, I asked what was her role. So can you explain to us what her duties are and what she is not providing that you wanted? From my understanding, from what she said, it sounds like she's helping out, or her duties include the discharging of the program.
Of long-term care?
Of the long-term, the process.
Right. Yeah, Mr. Chair, Supervisor Stamper, yes. So she's going to play a significant role in helping us with the closures and the downsizings. One of the things that's really important is because there's a lot of players at the table that are involved, you know, the guardians, the state, the managed care organizations, our BHD staff, it's important to have one person kind of facilitate that process to ensure that everybody is doing what they're said they should do. If our staff are not doing something, we have an independent person kind of be there to address all the issues that come up. Because those are lengthy meetings. There's a lot that goes on. So she could play a significant role with that. She's also just generally with redesign, you know, kind of play the, with our redesign, with all the work that Sue Gottich is working on and making sure that is consistent with our hospital operations. So playing that facilitator role with that as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I just had a question for you. How many employees do you have now at BHD?
So at BHD, it's about 830.
Yeah, I was going to say 8. I'm going to say about 850, but it's in that range.
So we'll say 840.
Okay.
Okay. And if the budget were enacted the way you would like, how many would you have a year from now?
Sure. There's about 133 FTEs that are to be abolished in this budget. That doesn't mean that's going to be 133 employees. Some people could shift to other opportunities. There could be a lot of those positions are vacant. So I don't know the full impact in terms of the numbers, but there's 133 positions that will be abolished.
133 positions that will be abolished, roughly.
Right.
How many administrative positions are abolished?
Yeah. So in this budget, we did a lot of we did $1.5 million in overhead cuts, including administrator position. One was in Department of Health and Human Services. That was an operations director.
Was that BHD? Just for those of us, I'm talking about BHD. We're on the BHD org unit right now.
That position oversaw.
You're answering my question was BHD employees, right? Not
yes.
The whole department.
Yep. This position responded to both.
So we're working at about a number of 840, and we're at about 840-ish, and we're eliminating about 133 positions at BHD. We're all clear on the terminology, right?
Okay. Yep.
And then my question was, how many administrative positions at BHD are you eliminating of those 133?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, just to clarify, the 133 FTE number includes both DHHS and BHD only because there was a large shift of the community services branch wraparound and EMS over. So some of the positions, particularly related to the community service,
okay. Well, just give me. I just want the BHD programs.
The BHD number alone goes down 236.3, but that's because about 100 of those were shifted from the Behavioral Health Division to the Department of Health and Human Services. So that, in my world, doesn't count in terms of of what is being eliminated per your question.
Okay. So then we'll just keep it at the 133
number. Correct.
So of those 133 positions, how many administrative positions were eliminated?
Mr. Chairman, supervisors, we do have a spreadsheet at the back of the budget that we've reconciled, and then we could mark those up with which ones are supervisory or administrative type position and get that back to you. I don't have the number today to give to you, but we do have every single one line itemed.
Okay. It would be helpful if, I mean, you know, this is a very difficult process, and that seems to me, I mean, we've had a lot of kind of philosophical questions and things and questions about real difficult policies, but the actual number of employees that we are going to be employing would seem to be something that someone coming to a budget hearings might have at their fingertips. And for us to make decisions, it's helpful to have some information. So essentially you're telling me you don't know the answer to that question, the 133. Of the 133, you don't know how many administrative positions are at this point. We could find it, but you don't know it, right?
Correct, Mr. Okay. Chair, and I don't have it today.
Thank you.
I apologize.
Okay. Excuse me?
Add it to the questions.
Yeah, add it to the questions.
Yeah.
Mr. Weddle? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Weddle.
Supervisor Lipscomb, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. CSP had a fair amount of discussion on it earlier. I'd like to understand the comparisons that are presented in the budget document, comparisons of the non-Milwaukee County CSP, the contracted CSP, and the in-house CSP. There's no clear breakout of sort of how the savings number is determined. I'm trying to understand, is some of that savings, is that the does that have the embedded legacy costs, or is that separated out? So I'm trying to or not the savings, then the comparison of total cost has all those legacy costs embedded in that. So that's why it's a skewed number, right? It's got to account for a third of the cost.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor Lipscomb, you are correct that the savings presented in this budget associated with the outsourcing of the CSP programs do not include legacy costs. Those are separate. Those are still in the budget as is. In terms of the actual cost of the programs, I have to refer to DAS on that, but my guess is because that is a cost of that program that it would include the legacy cost. I have the number at my chair. I can get the actual number of legacy in there.
I appreciate it. I don't necessarily need the number today, but I think it's the kind of thing that I want to understand the dynamic, because it's not an apples to apples comparison. It's presented as this great inefficiency, and yet much of it is legacy cost that's just going to get redistributed anyway. It's not all savings. The other is this, is the question of the efficiency of our internal program in comparison to the outsourced ones in terms of number of clients served. That seems to be the other other principal argument, right, in terms of why you would move to outsourcing? Or if that's not your principal argument, if you could explain it, because it keeps coming back. I mean, this is like the perennial budget cut that the administration presents year after year. I never understand it. I'm not sure why you're so hot on it, but if you could explain that to me.
Yeah, so the cost of running the two CSPs we have, the cost for just those two CSPs, covers the whole cost of running all the other CSPs we have in our system. So all the other CSPs serve many more people than the two CSPs that we currently have in the Behavioral Health Division.
Yeah, I got that from the chart. But much of that cost you will not save by eliminating the two CSPs, because it's legacy, cross-charge, other stuff that's going to get redistributed either in your budget or other budgets. Mm-hmm. So why is it that... I guess here's my thing. If you've got the ability to manage an internal program then anytime I hear someone say the private, the other agency does it better, I say to myself, well, then that's a failure of the department to manage their program. If there's an outcome you want out of your program, your internally managed program, then manage for the results that you want out of your program. But year after year, administration doesn't say, we'd like to make changes to our CSP to make them better. They just keep saying, we think we can contract this and we'll eliminate it. And yet, year after year, you've heard the board say, we're not really comfortable with the fact that you'd like to eliminate 100% of our internal capacity and rely strictly on an outsourced model. Obviously, we're at like, what are we, 80% outsourced or something? Mm-hmm. So we've gone a long way towards that, but there's clearly been a resistance to 100% outsourcing of it. And I don't understand why the department doesn't take responsibility for achieving the kind of results internally that they expect.
Mr. Chair, Supervisor Lipscomb, this is not about outcomes or results or anything like that. This is not about that. The outcomes are comparable with our county-run operations compared to the rest of the providers. This is not about that. This, in fact, is about... It is about savings. I mean, it's a hard decision, but when we can get a lot more people served with the dollars that are being spent, it's really about that. And I understand that, over time it's going to be, in this budget we made some major downsizing decisions which resulted in us having some more money that we can reinvest. We didn't have that last year because our downsizing wasn't as dramatic, and that's why we didn't really have money to reinvest last year. But this year it's a little different. But when you take $700,000 and then next year it'll be $1 million, that's significant savings that we can reinvest and serve more clients. Making the decision from that perspective.
If I can follow up, so I appreciate that you would say that. So it's not about the results or the performance of the program as opposed to the outsource. It's all about the cost. So is that cost because all the providers pay significantly less or have less benefits, how are they able to do it for so much less than us, and we aren't able to achieve that? It sounds like, from the other things that you're doing in terms of their cost of living, they haven't had a change in their contracted rate in 13 years or something. Sure. So it suggests that there may be problems within that outsource system in terms of they've been held down so long that, I mean, and now you're seeing it. You're acknowledging it with the first sort of cost of living, and there's some statement in there like, there will be more to come. Don't you think once we've outsourced it completely, we're going to be in a bad negotiating position in terms of controlling those costs? That they will come up because they will have us over the barrel, so to speak, relative to we need to buy those spots. They're the only providers at that point. We don't have any internal capacity. Does that not concern other people?
Mr. Chair, Supervisor, it doesn't concern me. I don't believe that would be an issue.
In terms of...
That's fine.
Okay.
I think that answered that question.
Okay.
I mean...
Whatever could be provided in terms of that narrative, it's unclear to me how sort of all the expenses and how the savings are... calculate. I don't know if there's probably a backup spreadsheet or something that could be helpful in showing that, and it'll be helpful in potential amendments.
If I could just go back now, he gave me a chance to think about my last question. So we were talking about just BHD. You said we were about 840 employees, but 260 are leaving from BHD. But in your world, how many of those, 100 and some, are going DHHS? But 260, was that the number you said are leaving BHD about?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, okay. I have to admit, I'm still getting used to the division of these two organizations also. So the FTE count at BHD after the move in the county exec's budget that you're looking at currently is 564.7. That's the FT count for BHD. On the DHHS side, it's 418.2.
And so what was it? 564.7. And what is it now?
Well, that's what it is in the recommended budget.
No, what is it today?
That's an excellent question, because that number doesn't include the community services area wraparound or EMS. And today, those are included under BHD. So these numbers I'd have to try and figure out a comparable number. To me, would be currently today, we have about 836, give or take, FTE. We are decreasing that by approximately 130. So that would take it down to about 700-ish FTE.
If it was apples to apples.
Correct. But what's happening, what's getting confused in here is that today the community services branch, wraparound, and EMS are included in BHD. And every FTE number I have in my head includes those numbers. As of 2014, if this recommended budget stands, those FTEs are now accounted for in this budget under Org 8000 for DHHS. And so I don't know off the top of my head, because I haven't been functioning in that changed world, of what the FTE count is. I can have the staff do a spreadsheet that would compare that. I just don't have it in my head.
No, I'm not trying to trip you up.
No, I know. It's a big change for all of us.
Right. I'm just trying to get a figure as to, so then, but you're still moving these out of BHD.
Correct.
Okay. So the question then will remain, how many administrative positions are being eliminated in BHD? Since it seems to me BHD has almost, if we're going from 830-ish to 564.7, you know, we're 260 less positions. It would seem that you would be able to reduce a significant amount of administrators in order to accomplish overseeing those people. And my question is, how many administrative positions have been eliminated because we're seeing a significant decrease in the number of positions at BHD? That can be added to the written if you don't have an answer, and I would appreciate an answer at some point. Unless somebody has something.
Mr. Chair, Supervisors, there's...
Please identify yourself, sir.
I'm sorry. My name's Matt Fortman. I'm from DAS Fiscal. There's 15 FTEs reduced in management and support services on January 1, 2014. Additionally, there's a pharmacy services director unfunded at that date and one staffing assistant abolished in July in this budget.
Okay, can we just get the list of those people,
sure,
those positions that
absolutely
are?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And maybe their payroll level?
How many?
15. Did you have something to add, Mr. Puckett?
It's in our budget.
Okay, did you have something?
Oh, yeah, I have something.
I'm sure you do.
And I want to relate to something I asked earlier. I'm not really trying to witch hunt, but I'm concerned about if more patients go into the community. As I said before, I want to make sure that they have as good service or not better service than they're receiving now. Do you collect audits? Do you get audits from these particular agencies? Can somebody give me some audits? Can somebody do something to give me some some information so I know that these patients, with all the 25, 30 parts of your plan that are going to be put into effect, that these patients go to places where they're going to be, and there was some discussion earlier about the private hospitals, whether or not they have the capacity or the capability, as opposed to capacity, to treat patients as far as their mental health concerns needs are. So I want to see some audits. I want to know something about the agencies. And again, I'm not witch hunting. I'm not trying to witch hunt. But when 150 people are going to lose their jobs, I want to make sure that they're losing their jobs for very good reasons, as opposed because we just decided this should happen. Well, for the 14 budgets that I've seen, there's a lot of deciding that this stuff should happen. So I'd like to see that. itself, or, and I, again, I don't know a lot of the, where these agencies are, I should say. There may be constellations of group homes all across the north side, south side, east side, west side. I don't know where, I don't know what's happening, and I want to know what's happening. So I'd like to see some audits. I'd like to see identification of where the agencies, where these people are going to go to. From what I heard, for two sessions on, I think it was Friday, it might have been Thursday, over at your site, that I heard some very serious and what I considered very good questions related, not, and it wasn't a lot about the pay, a lot about the people providing the care. They were concerned about the patients and the shift in environments. These people are, as opposed to people just being, going to a group home, and the next, as one of the one of your employees said, she's seen in summer that people are walking around in winter clothes, and it looks as if they are attached to group home sites. So I want some information. I want some information. I want some more information, personally, for me, for this supervisor who was a social worker, still is certified as a social worker. I want information. Thank you. Audits. I want some information with respect to these agencies. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Do we have any further discussion on of item 2, BHD? If not, we can jump ahead to item 1.